Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guests are Dr. Mecca Nagel and Philip Otinho. Nagel is an associate professor of philosophy at SUNY Cortland and a senior visiting fellow of Cornell University's Institute for African Development. Otinho is an executive member of the New York Africana Studies Association and the Help Kenya Project, a non-governmental environmental and technology organization. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Listen, I invited both of you here to talk about the 2004 Nobel Peace Prize winner, Wangari Maathai, right? Mm-hmm. About her Green Belt movement, which she founded in Africa in the mid-1970s. But first, Mecca, I wanted to ask you, I know you've been involved in environmental issues mm-hmm. for a long time. What made you switch your focus to Africa?
Well, I started in Germany, mm-hmm. Becoming interested in the Antarctica campaign that Greenpeace was running. And when I came to the States, I became an organizer for Greenpeace and canvasser. And we went to Love Canal and various other places in New England and New York to highlight the toxic waste materials, the super fun sites that have been created by chemical companies that then, leave town and change their name and become good, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Yeah, or disappear altogether,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And so we, I'd like to be associated with organizations that have that kind of watchdog point of view. And I've also become involved in women's studies, especially when I studied philosophy at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. I taught in women's studies in Minnesota for several years. And when I came to Cortland, I got involved in more in prison issues because I thought that was an issue that needed a lot of attention since most of the industries have left central New York, and the prison industries took their place in order to keep central New Yorkers in their towns and mm-hmm. And provide another kind of so-called booming economy. Right. This is a very roundabout way of coming to Africa, but what I noticed when I talked to prisoners, when I taught in prisons, is that a lot of the prisoners were basically African nationalists. Uh-huh. They had their love and yearning for Africa. And that made me switch basically my focus. I think, mm-hmm. As a teacher, I always want to be prepared, and I want to, my students give me clues where they want to go, and I knew very little about the mm-hmm. continent, and mm-hmm. so I switched to Africa.
What about you, Philip? Mm-hmm. Have you always been involved in environmental issues? Or?
Yeah, I worked with the Kenya Medical Research Institute, and we were doing research on the effects of chemicals. Essentially, we found that the DDT has been banned in America, mm-hmm. yet we have chemical companies still producing DDT. And one of their greatest markets is the coffee farmers in Africa. Mm-hmm. So when we were working with the coffee farmers and all the farmers in the areas of Naivasha, which is around Rift Valley, the Nyanza province, which is around the Lake Victoria area and the coastal area of Kenya, we found that most of these chemicals were being used in the farms in those areas. So it somehow drew my area, because where I come from is a fishing industry area, and I was somehow connected to the environment. And recently we started a project of technology and environment, where we donate computers, and every one computer that we donate, we have to have one tree planted in its place.
Oh, nice.
So we are connecting the environment and technology together.
Oh, that's great. Oh, what a good idea. Mm-hmm. We can maybe use something like that here.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that remarkable Dr. Wangari Maathai. Right. She's an amazing woman, and and so many of us were so thrilled when she won the prize last year.
Exactly.
Let's talk about her.
Yeah, the first African woman to ever win the Nobel Peace Prize, and really the first environmentalist to win the prize. And it ruffled a few feathers around the world, where people are, this is a prestigious prize for people who have been clearly doing good in the human rights arena. Why, would the committee choose somebody who's planting trees?
Oh, but this is so much more what she's doing for women's rights,
exactly.
women's health, and
exactly.
so on. Have you met her? Mm-hmm. Have either one of you?
Yeah, she gave a talk at what college was that? She gave talk in after the United Nations Women's Day. Mm-hmm. The next day she gave talk at the Cooper Union, and she became one of the first African to give a talk at Cooper Union. It's a small college in the southern tip of Manhattan, but it's the hall has hosted one of the big people in America. So I met her there, and in Kenya, I grew up in Kenya, and she was on the daily television, because during her time, the government had the monopoly of the television, and what happens is, like, if you are doing something that the government doesn't like you to do, you'll be seen on the TV television. But if you are doing something that people want to see, you won't see in any televisions in Kenya.
My Kenyan students report to me that their image of Wangari Maathai was, you know, she was on TV and always caricatured as the mad woman with loose hair running around and saving trees from loggers.
And then she started something called the Green Belt Movement. That's the official name. Yeah. Do you know the beginnings of that? How did she do that? How did she end up being able to even convince people that this was going to become something? Do you know?
Yeah, and she actually details that in her book called The Green Belt Movement, Sharing the Approach and the Experience, that was published by Lantern Books last year.
And it should be available. If not, I'm sure some of our small bookstores in town could order it for you.
Right. She actually became involved in the planting seedlings for farmers to have firewood available next to their house when her husband was running for a political campaign, and he actually became a member of parliament in the early 70s. And she had just returned from Germany, actually getting a PhD in biology, and she was the first woman PhD of East Africa. So she has a number of firsts, you know, that she's rounded up. And so she founded a small NGO, EnviroCare, that she named it. And later on, she was approached by the National Women's Council of Kenya, a very prestigious government-aligned organization, and they asked her to join the environmental committee. And she was noticed, the organization was involved in highlighting the malnutrition of the people. Even they noted it wasn't just poor people who were suffering from it, but even the affluent ones, the farmers. And
why was that? Was it just because lack of education about nutrition?
Well, that was part of it, but it was in particular because of the whole re-engineering of the agriculture to grow cash crops, you know, like coffee, like toxic coffee, and not cassava, you know, and nutritious foods that they grew up, you know. So it's the problem of moving from subsistence farming to cash crop farming, and in the end, you know, people were not paid for what they put out, and they got a lot of promises, and you know, women and children certainly were the first to suffer, but the whole community suffered. And so she thought, well, starting within this women's group, you know, starting tree campaign would do a lot of good for everyone. It would stop soil erosion. You could plant fruit trees next to the perimeters, you know, and women wouldn't have to go long distance to carry firewood, and they would benefit from the local indigenous grown fruit trees and, you know, harvest those. And so there was a whole education campaign involved in that. And she thought to call that campaign Save the Land Harambe. And Harambe, Philip can maybe translate.
Yeah, Harambe is a Swahili word that's meaning pulling together.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Swahili word. It's very common. Like we usually have fundraisings for the schools and everything. So when you have fundraisings here, we'll have announcements over the radio that, oh, we are having Harambe. So we're pulling together the resources to build a project. So it's a very common word used in Kenya or East Africa in general.
So this is how she got her funding. I was going to ask you, how did she get her original funding? Did she pull people together?
Well, she went to the Department of Forestry and say, you know what, we have now 15 million, it was mid-70s, we have 15 million Kenyans. We'd like to, our organization would like to have free seedlings, and we think a good number would be one tree per one Kenyan, so we need about 15 million. And the guy just laughed her off.
Oh, man.
But she had the last laugh. Because in the end, you know, 30 years later, the Green Belt Movement that grew out of that campaign from the women's movement, they planted over 30 million trees.
Yes, that's what I understand. And and there are over 600 community networks across Kenya based on this organization. Is that true as well?
Well, it's actually was larger at one point. And it's interesting, the greatest support the Greenbelt movement got was during the Moi regime when things got really heated, you know. And it was a non-government organization by then, an NGO, that was formidable because it's basically taunted the Moi government, and usually NGOs stay out of politics altogether.
I would assume so. And I, you know, most of our listeners know that means non-governmental organization, NGO, which we will be using from here on out probably. So she, what interests me about her is that she was able to incorporate the environment with women's rights, reproductive health. How did she bring all this together? Did she bring in experts?
When you look at her work, first of all, we start in the 70s because when she left, when her husband was running for MP, they say Congress, in one of the suburbs area of Nyeri, she was the chairperson of National Council of Women's. And we come from a patrilineal society where women are supposed to be sitting at the back. So she was very focal in upbringing the women's right. And this made her rub the soldiers with the heads of the state. And they tried to take her away from National Council of Women because of her liberal views. So they threw her away from the National Council of Women. And that's from how they gave her an upbringing, like, okay, I can concentrate on my NGO because they don't want me from the mainstream of what they want to hear.
Wow. So she did end up running for parliament, winning in 2002.
Right.
How did that...
Over 90% of the vote.
Really? I was going to say, how did that campaign go? Did she have a lot of people who were against this, I would assume, her running for office? Has she made a lot of enemies?
She was approached earlier to run for president, but the problem is like where she comes from is Kikuyu ethnic group. They are very patrilineal, so women take the backstage. But since 1990, there's a new era of multi-party system in Kenya, and the ruling party that has been in Kenya for over 40 years, people are getting tired of it because of dictatorship. So it opened the door for many women to come in and contest the seats. And overwhelmingly, because she had been known championing the rights of the women and everything, she was voted by over 90% of the electorate.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's unheard of, at least in this country. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that there's a bunch of community networks, and do they have to abide by a governing philosophy that she has come up with? How do these networks join the Greenbelt movement? Do they have to?
Right. Well, it's one thing is, you know, how seedlings get distributed, and the philosophy of the Greenbelt, and the name implies that. An ambitious goal of not planting individual trees, but when you do a tree planting ceremony, just go for 1,000 seedlings, right? So you basically create a very large strip of greens that is a sanctuary for birds. It creates has a lot of benefits associated with
for the environment as well.
Yes, and avoiding erosion and a host of other things. The idea is the Greenbelt movement is for the people and it's run by the people. You know, so there may be an outreach person who's saying, here, you know, the main office in Nairobi can give you all these seeds. You know, now we would like you to create a committee and share with us what your needs are. When you're ready to, order your seedlings, let us know. And there's a whole 10-point program involved how you do it. And the focus there is that, you know, you really have to be ready to receive the plants because you can't just get these trees and then we come and you haven't dug the, you know, holes for it, right? And that have to be, you know, 2 feet deep and wide.
So people who decide to do this really have to plan and have a real committee and people who are committed to carrying it.
And it's really
through.
Grassroots. Mobilization, the overhead is very low, you know, in terms of, you know, Wangari's own salary. I mean, she constantly complains about the level of corruption, and it seems like to us, you know, from the outside, that she really lives by these principles, you know, that she's into accountability, and donors really like to hear that kind
Isn't
of music.
Isn't that a remarkable new idea? Yeah. People being in office and being accountable.
And guess what? we see from the Ugandan experience that when you have have more women in power, that it helps fighting corruption. You know, so women are not yet so entrenched that they are going into that nepotism and help yourself while you're, you know, seeking projects and money.
You are listening to Out of Bounds on WEOS. I'm Tish Perlman, and my guests are Dr. Mecca Nagel and Philip Otinho. We're talking about the Green Belt Movement in Kenya. I'm curious about the idea that this movement is also helping in poverty reduction. Mm-hmm. How does that happen?
First of all, you find the nature of the Kikuyu people where Wangari Maathai founded the Green Belt Movement. They are farmers. And what does the farmers need? They need food. They need, the women need fuel for the, to cook this food. Mm-hmm. So with the fuel, they need to plant the trees so they can cut these trees, and then they get the food. They can cook the food. So the Kikuyus, where she started the projects, they have small, and the areas are very good. And if there's a saying that you could even spit a seed, and then the next day you come on, and then the seed, the maize is already there because of the soil. It's very rich volcanic soil. Uh-huh. And that's where she came. There was just like somebody who wanted to do something for the community. So by planting these trees, people were able to get the food. They'll be able to sell some of the wood to other communities, mm-hmm. because even in some areas where there's no fuel, we need the wood to run the coffee factories. So there's a bigger market for all these things here, and there was not enough trees. And there's some places where there is erosion, so we need to have the water catchment area. So in these areas, this is where Wangari Maathai came in, because there was, the government was doing very little in these areas. And the 1st of April is Kenya National Tree Day, which is always the government to give free seeds. But there was nobody who was coming to coordinate, like, where do they plant these seeds? Where do we do with this? And what kind of tree, what kind of seedlings do we need? Yeah. And how can they benefit? Because people end up planting eucalyptus who end up eroding the soil because they didn't know what to do.
Eucalyptus is an exotic tree for Kenyan standards. It's the British really encouraged that planting because it grows very fast, and it's exported, you know, for use in Britain and elsewhere. But it's very detrimental to the soil because it sucks all the water out of the ground, and so it's extremely detrimental. You can't really plant anything else and forget about planting cassava.
Does it take over some of the
and the roots? It's just really horrendous. Uh-huh. Right. So what Philip mentioned, the prioritizing of water harvesting is the key to end poverty, and because water is so necessary in that semi-arid region of Kenya. And, you know, once you have the water, then the rest will follow. You have your farms, and you have your production. And so that's what the Greenbelt mobilized for. You see, you know, how you asked the question earlier, you know, how did, you know, how come Greenbelt, you know, went after so many goals, you know, in terms of poverty alleviation, in terms of democratic rights. Mm-hmm. It's the typical path of an organizer, right? You know, here Wangari sees, okay, we need the trees. Let's start with the trees, right? But, you know, then, you know, the government, you know, tries to build this skyscraper in the last, you know, public park in Nairobi, a skyscraper, 62 floors, designed for party headquarters, right? So it's like, you know, let's make a big sign in the, you know, we are, you know, a metropolis in the heart of Africa, right? And she's over my dead body, she said, right?
People can't eat. Why do we?
Yeah. And you need, I mean, look at Central Park, what it does for New York City, right? It's the same for Uhuru Park, for Nairobi, right? Absolutely essential, the lung of the city, and you know, and a place for people to gather, you know. So she also thinks about the leisure, you know,
and community as well.
Community,
bringing
absolutely.
The community together. One needs to have space.
Right. And that was the start of her falling out with the government. The next day, the government ransacked her house. You know, there was, you know, in government buildings, and she was put out.
Was her life
ever
in danger? Was she ever threatened?
Very much so.
Very much, because even nobody will rent the offices for Greenbelt Movement. Yeah. So she had to move on to her apartment where she was staying, and then started on the backyard.
Yeah.
Then furthermore, she had already just received a divorce from the husband because she's too tough-headed.
But there's only one man in the house, and that's him.
And she was acting like him, right?
Right, right. Now her daughter is actually heading one of the Greenbelt initiatives globally. So her children definitely followed her.
Carrying on the tradition of the strong woman. That's great.
Yeah.
What do you think winning the Nobel Peace Prize did for the movement, good and bad? Any feel for that?
For it's helped champion the rights of women in Kenya, that has been in Africa in general. When you talk of Africa, nowadays the G8 meeting had in Scotland, what did you hear about the poverty evolution in Kenya or in other parts of Africa, debt forgiveness? Mm-hmm. But did you hear about the women's right? So most of the parts of Africa are matrilineal societies. Women are not just taking the back seat. So Wangari Maathai is the person who brought up this women's right into the forefront.
Uh-huh.
And her winning the Nobel Peace was not about the environment. It's about the women's rights, the women's issues, or the basic issues of a human right.
Mm-hmm.
But she brought it from the perspective of from the women's side.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, when you look at the Greenbelt movement, she started the Greenbelt movement in her own ethnic areas, and the movement has not spread into all over the places of Kenya because of ethnic lineage and everything's on there. So that's one of the drawbacks of the Greenbelt movement.
Mm.
It's not like a national movement in Kenya, like everywhere you find the Greenbelt movement. It's something that people associate with one ethnic group that, that's their own.
Mm.
And they have not done so much to bring all these national issues into other areas.
And you don't think there ever could be?
They could be. Now it has created an awareness, but you see the problem... Africans is still like people line up from your ethnic, and sometimes people see you from your ethnic, they don't see you as a national figure.
I see. So it's
even that's why it's making
segregated.
So much worse in Africans and everything, because people see you not as a national figure, but they see you from the ethnic boundary. But she has done a lot to bring the women's rights and everything. So it's just about the women's rights.
Mm-hmm.
And all the rights of people, the basic things that people need in life, the food.
Oh, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
And she certainly is a hero to many women in this country.
Exactly.
We were jumping up and down when we heard that she'd won.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And I must say, you know, when you know, coming out of the environmental movement, it's in Germany and the U.S., it's so wide.
Yes.
And so for an African woman to be on the forefront now of the environmental movement, I think it gives the Greens all over the world a big boost.
And then some ideas about
and
inclusion,
perhaps. We hope that would
we
be
wish.
The trend. Yeah.
Yeah.
But see, Greenbelt has been a pan-African movement since 1985. It has been, you know, a respected organization despite the troubles at home all over Africa. It has set up satellites in Japan and Haiti, certainly the U.S., so many countries all over the world. And I think that trend will continue. And, you know, she highlights the need for tree planting and for looking at the environmental issues as a platform to think holistically about what we want. And of course, she's joined by other people like Vandana Shiva of India, and, you know, Julia Butterfly, if you will, of the old growth forests of the West. And here, even Cornell in Ithaca, you know, there is now a movement to restore and to conserve the wooded area near Cornell so that it doesn't get converted into parking.
And that fight is going on as we speak.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to know, do you think there more and more people are learning about this movement now, especially since she won this prize?
Yeah.
Are there people who would want to take the lead and start this movement in this country? I mean, the environmental movement does seem to be being resurrected. We are in danger.
Right.
So.
Right.
Is there a...
Maybe under a different name. I mean, although, you know, it would behoove us to get, for a change, get ideas out of Africa, not import ideas into Africa.
That's
the other part I like about it. So
wouldn't
I think there's great hope.
That sounds very interesting
mm-hmm.
to me.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted to discuss the journal that you mm-hmm. that you work on?
Oh, yeah, sure. We started an online journal called Ouagadou, a journal for transnational gender and women's studies. And it's a free journal. We started it. It has an African name, Ouagadou.
Which means what?
Which is a way of describing the ancient Ghana of West Africa. But there's also a whole myth connected to it involving a snake. Snakes are very powerful animals and mythical animals mm-hmm. in Africa and elsewhere as well. And that snake, that python, wanted a virgin every year. And at one point, a guy who was in love with this virgin to be sacrificed, he cut off the python's head. And since then, the gold ceased to flow in Ghana and went elsewhere. So it became the doom of the Ghana Empire at that point. But the point of it is to focus on issues dear to women, but also focus on gender aspects. Then we will talk about men as well, right? And our next issue is devoted to women and the global environment. And I actually have a piece on Wangari Maathai in that
and
issue.
And is this a real paper? Or is it an online
it's
magazine?
Just an online.
It's just an online. Do you
want
to give me
the
address?
We won't kill trees for that. Yeah.
We'll plug in our computers and kill other things, right?
Yeah.
Do you have an address that people can access?
Well,
this?
People can Google for Ouagadou. It's Ouagadou. Mm-hmm. That's the spelling of it.
And you accept mm-hmm. submissions from people as well?
Absolutely. And we are very delighted to see submissions on an ongoing basis coming from Africa in particular. We publish actually in other languages. Our hope is to publish from Arabic to Zulu, to not just favor English in particular or other colonial languages, but African languages would be in particular welcome, mm-hmm. but other Asian languages, et cetera. As well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's God. Yeah. That sounds very exciting. Right. When did you start that?
We started it 2 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, it's been going for a while.
Yeah.
Then.
So, and we really want to make a shift in feminist journals. A lot of good feminist production has happened in North America, but we really wanted to see a global and post-colonial perspective evolving, and we hope our journal will contribute to that effort.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds great. Also, I wanted to ask you about. I've heard that. The Greenbelt Movement mm-hmm. now has a Women's and Girls Project that mm-hmm. was started a couple of years ago. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, one aspect of it is deals with HIV and AIDS and malaria prevention. So to really empower the girl child, the women, in particular what Philip was talking about, being in patriarchal societies, mm-hmm. that one's voice is very much squashed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine they also deal with issues of regarding female genital circumcision or mutilation, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and which is practiced in some of the ethnic groups in Kenya. Very few. So, one has to be very sure that this is not an African practice per se. And so it's an empowerment on all fronts. And, so health education is an important one. And education, now that primary education is made available for free to the public, we see more girls enrolling in primary education, which is very exciting.
Oh, that's great.
Even the Maasai, pastoralist societies are joining the schooling. And I think that's a very important movement. And so the Greenbelt would contribute to the effort to highlight and make more schooling available beyond the primary level.
Mm-hmm. That's great. We have run out of time, but I thank you both mm-hmm. so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Out of Bounds is produced by Tim Reppert at Rep Studio in Ithaca. We are a project of the Women's Interfaith Institute in Seneca Falls. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. If you want to talk to us, you can email us at weos@hws.edu. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.